Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to our show today. Today we are talking about the harvest. We have spent the summer, and you know, we're still watching our gardens blossom, and you know, we're looking forward to reaping the benefits of what we've worked so hard on. And we are joined today with our lovely special guest, Gina Rainwater of Rainwater Falls Apothecary. Hello, Gina.
Hi, Elaine. How are you today?
I'm awesome. And great. Yes, I'll introduce myself. I am Elaine Reed Cole, and I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Dana Zimmerman. Hi, Dana.
Hello, Elaine. Hi, Gina. Thanks for joining us, and welcome everybody who's listening to the show. We're happy to have you with us.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, well, we're so happy to have you. We have had Gina on before, and we had an amazing show, and we kind of ran out of time. And so we really wanted to have her back on because she has a wealth of information as far as growing and utilizing and just making things delicious and how to be healthy about the whole thing. So I'm just going to kind of throw it at you, Gina, and say, what have you been brainstorming for today's show?
Well, I was thinking about right now, like anybody, we're going to start off with some of the digestive herbs that we can start gathering and putting up. And one of them is peppermint. The peppermint is coming in really good right now. It may start to flower in some gardens, and it's important that we cut that back and harvest that before it goes to full flower and to keep its medicinal properties at its peak level. So in my own gardens, that's what I've been doing. I've been harvesting up my peppermint, and I just nip that down at the bottom, close to the ground, and take a few of the stalks and tie them up, and I hang them outside because the weather has been beautiful enough. I know it's been hot for a lot of people here in the Northeast, but the weather has been really beautiful and conducive to drying herbs because the wind has been blowing and the air is nice and warm, and that really allows the herbs to dry at the proper temperature and in the ample amount of time, not allowing them to over dry or keep too much moisture in them.
Okay,
so that's
now
what
when
I've
you
been up to.
When you dry them, do you dry them, like if you're doing it outside, do you dry them so that they're in the sunlight, or do you make sure that they're in the shade, or?
Well, this peppermint is an adaptogen or an alternative herb as well. So when I dry this during the day, I pull them up. Now, this is the important thing because sometimes during the night we might get a little dew on our stuff. So it's important to let that dew dry off and those drops and make sure you harvest a dry herb. So I go out in the middle of the day to harvest the peppermint and other heating herbs, well, sun herbs like the chamomile is another one, and I take those at high noon.
Okay.
And then I bundle them up, and then I hang them on I have this canopy frame that has no top on it, and so I have all these hangers on it, and so I hang it out there in the sun throughout the afternoon, and then during the afternoon, I bring them into my house, into my sunroom, and there I have places that I can hang these bundles to dry. Now, not everybody may not have the ability to do this, and if you're only doing a small amount, then you could just bundle them and put them right inside your house. And if you got like a ceiling fan or something like that, turn your ceiling fan on. That's the important part about drying herbs this way, is to make,
sure that they don't get musty
So you need a lot of air to have the air circulation and the air circulating, and then a warm temperature. Most people are air conditioning their house if they're fortunate enough to have air conditioning, and that could be good to an attic resource if you have an attic, and you can put it also, you can hang them up there as long as there's adequate ventilation and air movement. That's another great place to do it. That way you don't have to worry about weather.
Right. I love the way that drying herbs look in your kitchen. So if there's any way, you know, if you have like pot racks or something like that, it looks so beautiful. So, you know, not only is it right there to be able to use, but, you know, it's just like decorating at the same time. So I love that.
I do too. I don't do a lot of that. The only thing that I would, if you're going to use the herbs right away and you're hanging them in your kitchen to do the drying aspect of it, because sometimes maybe people might be cooking in their kitchen, boiling water for different things and causing steam, and then therefore the herbs can go back and forth a little bit. So if you were going to use them right away, I hang them in my kitchen, but for the most part when I'm drying the herbs, keep them away from steam, and then, you know, things go on in the kitchen that go along in the air, and if you've ever had to, okay, I've been guilty of this. You never wipe down the top of your refrigerator and you haven't done it in a while, and it has, like, stuff on there?
That's
the reason why I really don't dry in my kitchen for stuff that I'm going to long-term put up.
Okay.
So for
I
keep
great
that.
Great sense.
Yeah, because you don't want all that stickiness on the herb. You want them to dry completely, but not to overdry that they turn to powder either.
Okay.
So
right.
There's a fine line there, and most people know that just by touch and by color, because if you can leave them outside too long, they'll turn black on you because of the cool nights. And then, you know, even though let's say we weren't getting any rain and the dew factor wasn't much, but just leaving them in that inconsistent drying environment can cause the leaves to blacken and stuff, and they won't stay that really vibrant green that they should be staying. So this is why I do it this way.
Perfect.
Where I bundle them up and bring them into the house, the sunroom, in the way I had described before, because then once they're dry, you can just take your finger and strip down, go down the stalk, the stem, and all the leaves just come off into a nice pile. And then there, from that, you can choose to, you know, break them down a little bit more if you want to bag them and make your own tea bags. A lot of people can do that. I teach my students how to make their own tea bags, and they're great for gifts, you know, during the holidays. So you can bring your herbs in, and you can bag them in little bags and after they're dry and have them ready to go.
Nice.
For future use, stick it all in a jar. When you're done, don't like pack them down, because you don't. You want them to also to breathe a little bit in there. So put them loosely into a jar, and then just, you know, maybe once a week, shake your jar around a little bit and just give them a little a turn, so they just keep moving around and they don't like sit there and get smashed on top of each other. It just keeps them happier.
Right. Now, here's a question. Is there a good resource that people can go to for the empty tea bags?
Yes. Now, locally,
if you don't know
in the
it
Northeast.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And there's a place in Truro. And it is, oh my gosh, it's escaping me because I order from there all the time. And it's coming. Okay. You know what? That may come back to me. I'm going to go
We
down.
Can always post it on our Facebook page, too, once you know. Yeah. So we'll share that information with you, because that might be something that people really would be interested. You know, you're talking about mint, and mint tea is very nice. You had mentioned chamomile, too, and that makes a very nice tea also. So the idea of, you know, having those little sachet bags and being able to, say, you know, bring your own little sachet bag to work with you so that you can actually have it
A lot easier than bringing the
tea ball,
the infusers, you know, the tea balls. Even though that is the best way, the tea is best brewed loose, it's not always convenient. you know,
right.
for going on the road. So the name just came to me. It's Atlantic Spice in Truro, Massachusetts.
Right. I have heard of them. Very
yes.
good company.
And they,
yes.
Yes. And they have the tea bags. And they also have the muslin, the little muslin bags, too, because some people like to use those as well. Those are really good for roots when you get into wanting to steep things with roots, more tenacious parts of the plants, because they
mm-hmm.
don't bust as easily as the fine tea bag, which is good for your leaf and your flower, your delicate flower petals.
Right, right. How interesting. Now, I don't want to get totally stuck on mint, but I do want to ask you as far as the planting habits go, because, and this kind of goes with lemon balm, too, and stuff, is their growing habit. So can you talk about
mm-hmm.
that a little bit?
I can. The growing habits of the plants, especially in the mint family, are very invasive. So
mm-hmm.
invasive meaning that once you plant one little root, be prepared. I had my peppermint out in one area, and it grew and grew. And then I had this other area I was saving for my pond, like my waterfall pond, where I was going to put more of my wetter growing herbs that I need more water
yeah.
for. And now I call it peppermint pond because it has taken over everything. Needless to say, I don't have a pond yet because it's full of peppermint. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So that is the downs. You know, it's good and it's bad. I mean, you can have all this peppermint and harvest it all and do so many good things with it. But at the same time, you have to watch it. Like, I have rocks around that, and every year I constantly am cutting mine back to contain it, you know. But
right.
harvesting helps to contain it. But
right.
not to say it hasn't popped up in some of my lawn, which my husband loves the lawn, and he sees those peppermints coming up in the lawn. But I tell him, well,
it's
that's okay. You can just mow over it.
Yeah, it's the price you pay. So I ran into the same problem with lemon balm, which is
mm-hmm.
so wonderful to have around, but it overtook my lavender. You know, I didn't know when I planted it. I didn't know it started going, and I'm like, this is a beautiful plant.
Yeah,
until then, planted spread through everything. Yeah,
anything with a square stalk. Like how peppermint, they're squares, there's like four sides to it, same with the lemon balm. Anything in that family, if you ever see the stem that looks like that, that's going to, is a pretty good indication that that's all part of the mint family, and that is going to be an invasive plant. So
uh-huh.
that's just a little food for thought when you're out there looking around and saying, oh my gosh, I think I'll plant some mint, I think I'll plant some lemon balm, and knowing that, you know, plant it in a place. I always tell people, plant it in a place that you don't care where it goes wild, because these are wild, natural herbs, and they will just grow and grow, and you can let them
right.
go to flower and look beautiful. The lemon balm, on the other hand, that one is a little more trickier, because when you feel the petals and you smell them and they're nice and lemony, and then you go to infuse them, they're great when they're infused before they're dried, because once they're dried, they lose all that lemony, rich smell. And that
right.
lemon balm is just another word for it's also Melissa, also known as sweet Melissa.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep. So when you see Melissa, like a Melissa essential oil, you will know that it is a lemon balm. It usually comes across as lemon balm as the herb and Melissa
mm-hmm.
as the oil. If we're
okay.
getting into essential oil side of plants, which that is another topic we will cover at another time.
Another day, yes.
Yeah, another day.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
now, I have taken the lemon balm and put it into iced tea, just fresh out
mm-hmm.
of the garden. You know, if I'm serving tea to people, and even just, you know, cut some of the stalks and have it in a glass of water right there so that people can pick their own off of it. And it decorates the table and adds a nice little flavor to your tea, too.
It does. And, you know, one time, Elaine, I remember I came to one of your classes, And you had served us some beautiful cucumber water. And I was thinking how wonderful the lemon balm and the cucumber water would be together, and so refreshing and cooling to the system.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good idea.
Yes, I was, because my cucumbers are coming in, getting back to our gardens coming in, like my cucumbers are coming in crazy too now. And I was thinking off the top of my head, making your wonderful cucumber water, because I have been doing that. And then when you mentioned the lemon balm, I thought, wow, that could be a really great combination, lemon cucumber water.
Okay, so what are some of the almost like medicinal benefits to cucumber? Do we know? Does that?
Yeah, well, cucumbers in general, though, a lot of times you can, if you don't really know where to look, or you don't know anything about what you're looking at, and let's say, okay, cucumber, I wonder what that does. Think about the qualities of what a cucumber has. And you can do this, apply this to anything that you want to know, herbs, fruits, vegetables, meats, anything. But you look at their qualities, their gunas, as they call them in Ayurveda. And cucumbers are cooling, and they're wet.
Okay.
So in that, looking at that, they would be good for cooling down, like, heat in the body.
Okay, yeah.
So if you're pitching constitution and we're in the middle of summer, so that's how, you know, when we're taking in, we're making our cucumber salads right now, those are some of the medicinal benefits or energetic benefits.
Right.
Of the cucumber itself. And
the wet part, Gina, dissecting
it
down, that would be more like helping to keep you hydrated and flushing toxins out of the body and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Taking it in fresh versus like you're looking at the cucumber essential oil or the other aspects of cucumber. But that's how I like to use them. And I eat to the seasons as well, so I don't really use cucumbers and stuff in the wintertime so much, because wintertime is cooling, and the fall and the springtime is cool and wet, and, you know, that increases like type thing.
Right.
Too much of that will increase too much of that kapha in the body, but we're in the summertime. We need to cool down because it is the heating time of the year, so that increases our pitta
so
a little bit.
When you think of it, cucumbers being a summer vegetable are so appropriate for the season because, like you said, they're cooling and you need cooling in the summer, and they're wet and they're hydrating and you need hydrating in the summer. And so it's a perfect example of eating for the seasons, like you were saying.
Exactly. So that's really all I can speak to on cucumber as the vegetable.
Now,
and what we should be doing with them now.
What I have done in classes before, because, of course, you plant your cucumbers and all of a sudden you've got more cucumbers than you know what to do with. So you had mentioned, you know, cucumber salads, which are nice. You know, mix them in with some of your fresh tomatoes out of the garden, maybe some of your fresh basil. You know, it's...
Your dill, you can even put a few sprigs of your dill weed in there.
Right. And what I like to do is save old pickle jars and just put some vinegar back in that jar and slice up some cucumbers and just throw them in. You know, I don't get into the whole pickling process with them. But, you know, that way, too, they're still there. They're nice and crisp for a while, you know, and throw in a few fresh sprigs of dill into it, too. And I enjoy that. But one of the things that I did in yoga classes, and you might have even been here for this too, Gina, is I sliced it up, the cucumbers ahead of time, stuck them in the little refrigerator that's up in the practice room. And then when it came time for meditation, savasana, I passed them out to everybody, and they just stuck them on their eyes.
I was there for that, too, and that brings us into the reason why we do that is because of the astringent quality inside of the cucumbers, helping to reduce the puffiness and cooling of the eyes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
That was a wonderful experience. I was there for that one. As a matter of fact, I think one of the other girls in there actually enjoyed the cucumbers afterwards.
She ate it, yeah. Yep, ate them. You know, one actually took bites before she put them on her eyes, so they were little smiley faces on her eyes. So that was
pretty funny. And giving our eyes, the reason why the cucumber also not only reducing the puffiness underneath due to the astringent quality of it, but also the cooling effect is because also, we have pitta in our eyes because our eyes are fire, a place of transformation. Because when we see things, you know, that's how we transform the information or the object that we're looking at as well. So our eyes have a fire component to it. So that's another reason why when we use cucumbers on the eyes, it feels so nice and cooling to them. For anybody out there that knows about Ayurveda or want to know more about calming the heat in the eyes, if their eyes are feeling burning, really red and things like that, the cucumbers are really good for calming that pitta in the eyes down.
So this could be really good, a good practice for someone who spends an awful lot of their time on the computer.
Exactly. Exactly. Because we don't give our eyes enough rest. I know when I'm doing research or writing papers and things like that, that my eyes can begin to bother me. And I have to just kind of step away from that. And, you know, I do. I go get the cucumber. I just kind of lay down, put it on my eye, and just lay down for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. And that's really enough to kind of reset me and freshen my eyes up and actually freshening the mind, too, because you're allowing your mind to cool down. You know, that vata pitta is just like firing all the time when you're in the computer and trying to take care of all your work. That the cucumber's not only cooling the eyes, but the whole experience of laying with that calms the whole body down and cools everything, you know, from an energetic perspective.
Right, right. Geez, after the show, I'm going to go outside and peruse the garden and see if we have any more cucumbers ready. This sounds like a good idea.
Yes,
good idea. Got me thinking about the cucumbers now. So,
yeah, they're coming in.
They are. Thank goodness. Now, I don't want to get stuck on cucumbers either.
No,
but,
we can move right on.
Well, there's one more question that I have about cucumbers. Because I know that a lot of people say, oh, cucumbers, they give me indigestion. Is there anything that would help with that? Because, you know, people don't want to give up having them, but they're like, oh, God, I'm going to avoid that, you know, and they kind of poke around in their salad and not eat the cucumbers because they kind of have a tendency to repeat on them. So,
and that's kind of, well, that is a little bit deeper subject as to the reason why they're having an issue with the digestion of the cucumbers. Their Agni could be low. Their digestive fire could be low. It could already be cool down there, and there's not enough Agni, digestive fire, gastric juices to digest that coolness. And also them being astringent is tightening and that effect of the cucumber. So it's not the cucumber's fault here that the problem is. It's the stomach.
Don't blame the cucumber.
Right. Don't blame. Right. It's the low Agni in the stomach. So maybe perhaps before, and the coolness of a salad, it's all wet and cold. So it's kind of like this. Your stomach's all ready to eat, and you've done everything that you're supposed to do to prepare for food. You've taken a little lemon water, you know, or a sweet cake or something to get those digestive juices going, and you prepare to eat, and your Agni is low. So you stick that cold on top of a low burning, it's like a fire. Let's say you've got your fire out in your fire pit and it's very low, and all of a sudden you stick wet newspaper on top of it. What happens to that? Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. Yep. It starts to smolder smoke, and it comes back up. So it's
great
just
analogy.
It's just the digestive fire in the stomach is not enough to combat that cool wet of the cucumber.
Right.
So if you combine that with heating herbs, like you were saying, well, dill, maybe even add, you could add a little fennel to that because that's really good for that. Let me see off the top of my head. I'm trying to throw a recipe together. We'll just stick to the fennel for right now. Right. I don't want to run that right now. I don't want to run recipes without trying them on first. Could help.
The idea of the digestive.
Or even some black pepper.
Yes. I was just going to say that.
Yeah, black pepper will help with
cayenne
that.
Cayenne pepper and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Same.
And you could grind that. So you could take your salad and let's say that you could do your cucumber. Oh, you could add onion because it's heating.
Mm-hmm.
Little black pepper on that and try that, an onion, and see if, not like you, but if anybody's listening out there that has the problem with the cucumber backing up on them, they could try eating the cucumber like that, adding a little bit more heating spice to it to help it process through.
Digest,
the stomach a little bit better.
Right, right. Perfect. So now we have a few more ideas with our cucumbers. Also, gazpacho.
Gazpacho.
Which I'm sure you probably, I'm sure you probably make that, don't you, Gina?
I have made that. I did. I made that last year, and it was absolutely amazing. And the herbs and spices in that really helps to counteract, or it balances it. I don't want to call it counteract, because we're not counteracting anything. We're balancing. We're balancing out the ingredients together to make them assimilate and better digestible for you.
Right.
And that's such a great soup because it's a cool soup. It's a soup that we want to eat during the summertime. It's like also your pico de gallo.
Yes.
Is another one we can use cucumbers with. And it has the cumin in there to aid with the digestion. The tomatoes, the onions, the cilantro, and a little bit of olive oil is in that to help it. Yep, and a couple tablespoons of olive oil to kind of like bind it together. But that's another great, cool summer salad and something else that we can do with cucumbers as well.
Right. Now, neither one of those can actually keep, right? Like there's no way to actually preserve make them now and eat them now.
Eat them. It's like make them in at 3 and eat them at 5. I don't have much of a tolerance window for that. I like my stuff a little more fresh. To me, it breaks down. The gazpacho, on the other hand, you're fine with that. Making that in the morning because that's done in your food processor because everything is just pureed up and all your cold ingredients go in. You puree it and you pour it all over into a bowl and stick it in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that way, that sits and blends a little bit more. Pico de gallo, I am more of a fresh fan of pico de gallo because I don't like the breakdown after mixing the tomato in there. It breaks it down too quickly for me, and I like the looseness of it. So I'm one to have it fresh, make it and eat it right away.
Sure. Now, do you have any questions on the topic of cucumbers or anything related to it, Dana?
I'd just like to hear Gina talk a little more about, there's other herbs and vegetables that are in season right now, and I'd just like to hear Gina talk a little bit more about what she's doing with those. I mean, we've had a lot of tomatoes been, and peaches have been recent and that kind of thing. So I just want to hear more about harvesting what we've got going on right now. I think a lot of people do.
Okay. My tomatoes are a little bit behind, but I know everyone else is coming in. But mine's starting to come in now. And with the tomatoes, I do the pico de gallo, because that's one of my favorite things. I lean toward a lot of Mexican food. I like to do that one. Fried green tomatoes, if everyone, but that's a little southern
talk
dish.
Talk about that. Talk about
and
that.
And those
How
are really good.
How do people go about that?
Well, the green tomatoes, get them just before they begin to start to turn red.
Mm-hmm.
And because you don't want them totally green because then they're too sour.
Okay.
So you get them just as they're beginning to turn red. You slice them up, get a pan, a skillet, put a little bit of olive oil in there, take and slice your tomatoes up, make yourself a flour, so you have flour with some salt and pepper in it, and a light egg wash, and then just put your, dip your tomato in the egg wash, coat it in some flour, and put it in your pan, and just lightly cook that on a medium heat until they're like golden brown on one side, and then turn it over, cook it again on the other side, 2 or 3 minutes till it's golden brown, the tomato is tender, and just, you know, pull them off, put them on a plate. I like to just serve mine on the side. We eat them plain. We eat them with whatever, because you can eat them with whatever dinner you want. They go with everything. So it's like, you know, green eggs and ham. That's all I could think of, you know.
Right.
Eat them whenever you can.
Right. Right.
So,
that's funny.
Or you can take them, so that's one way, the fried green tomatoes. You can also take your tomatoes and make salsa out of them and process that in a food canner, if you'd like, for later on use. I like to make salsa.
Yep.
So I make a lot of fresh salsa with my tomatoes. And those are just with, like, my Jet Stars and my Early Girls. And the plum tomatoes. The pico de gallo is good to be made with the plum tomatoes because it's less seedy and they're more meatier.
Okay.
Fried green tomatoes, the Jet Stars, and the Early Girls because they're not as big and they're not as seedy as some of your heirlooms and some
mm-hmm.
of your Big Berthas.
Mm-hmm.
And those I save more to process out for spaghetti sauce.
There you go.
Because then you can make your tomato sauce with all the other, like the heirlooms. If you know, heirlooms can be very expensive, but if you're growing your own, no problem. And get those when they're really ripe and core those up, process those, peel them. You put them in a boiling water bath, 2 minutes till the skins blister. Pull them out. Peel off all the skins. And then take and put them in. The food processor, don't do it too long because you don't want to chop too much of the seeds up. The idea is to try to strain the seeds out of the sauce.
Okay.
So chop them up a little bit in the food processor and then sieve them out, strain them through a sieve, and or a colander or something with big enough holes that all of the little seeds won't go through. And if you really want to de-seed before you blanch them off.
Okay.
Like, you know, the boiling water, when you put them in the boiling water so the skins blister so you can peel them.
Yeah.
Some people prefer to do that because seeding is the hardest part.
I was just going to say, don't you lose so much when you're trying to de-seed them?
Seed,
I mean,
you really do because all you have left is the meat and a little bit of pulp that's left in the tomato. So
it's a chore.
It's one half a dozen the other. For me, it is. But for canning and for putting up for long periods of time, I do remove the seeds and always the blossom end as well. That's the rule of thumb for canning.
Yeah.
The seeds and the blossom ends.
Yeah.
So that's what I do
now,
with my digger.
There's a fairly new model that's out there of something, and this is only because I've been listening to an awful lot of David Wolf, which I think most of our audience probably knows of David Wolf. And he is promoting, I think it's even on like the Home Shopping Network and stuff, the Nutribullet RX. That looks fascinating. I think I might have to get one. It actually takes everything, even right down to like raspberry seeds, and pulverizes them. So there is no more need to have to de-seed anything. He puts in garlic and even puts in, like, the skins of the garlic. He's like, yep, don't have to worry about it. It can all go in. So I will sound like an infomercial myself, but this Nutribullet RX actually has a attachment that can go on it that will make it into soup right then and there in that blending part of it,
mm-hmm.
so that when it's done, it's soup. It's hot, it's steamy, it's soup.
Really?
Yes.
It's hot?
Yes.
Oh, so you can, like,
you
make your own
soup,
veggie
you,
soup for lunch.
And it's done in something like 7 minutes or something, maybe even less. It's done. So if you don't know what to have for lunch, but you've got, you know, like this whole batch of tomatoes and you've got, you know, your basil and, you know, why not just make yourself some tomato soup? It's a smart machine so that you press the button and you can walk away from it because it stops when it's done. It knows.
Hop
I'm just
darn.
Totally fascinated. I think I might have to just get myself one of these because, wow.
The only thing that I would think about that is that some seeds shouldn't be ingested, like the apple seed.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that's, I'm wondering if it could become, I'd have to do a little more research on that myself, but at the toxicity level of too many seeds, if you're a chronic apple juicer, let's say,
yep.
maybe then that could be a problem. But
interesting.
I think that sounds
it?
Like a great right. idea.
Well, you know, sometimes innovation, you know, wouldn't it be nice if it was just easier? So that we would do these things that are healthier for us.
That's the nice thing I like about Ayurveda, because it allows you to be able to work and be healthy and keep things simple. You know, like eating simple foods and it doesn't take all day long to put your cucumber salad together, or to put your, like, your gazpacho, or like you were just saying, a nice soup for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You're done in
mm-hmm.
7 minutes.
Yeah.
And you don't have to think about all that stuff.
Yeah. So anybody who's awake at 4 a.m., you can find these infomercial things that are on there, and you can actually watch this Nutribullet RX. It's not a dramatic show or anything like that. It's just something that you'll, if you turn the TV on at that time in the morning, you're going to find
okay.
it. Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
never going to be up that time, but that's okay. I mean, watching TV, that is. Well, as
all right,
I speak, I'm out here in my garden right now looking at a few more things that are coming in outside of my tomatoes, and my kale is still going strong. And that's
awesome.
Something that will go strong all into the winter. And I was wanted to share with folks how to make your own kale chips.
Good idea.
Because, you know, how kale is so wonderful for you and and all the properties that it has in it. But kale raw can rob the thyroid of iodine and cause thyroid problems. So we really need to cook our kale when we eat it. So instead of making soups.
I didn't know that,
soups,
Gina. I
oh.
did not know that.
Yes.
Did you know that, Dana?
I did not.
I did not. Huh.
Oh. Okay,
that's
well.
That's good to know. That's important.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, I normally don't eat a whole lot of raw kale because it's just so hard to chew. And maybe it's
exactly.
It
that
maybe it's that way for that reason, so people will cook
right.
it.
Right.
I was going to say,
right.
Dana, exactly. There's a reason why you can't. It's like kind of like, you know, beef hide. There's a reason why you can't chew it, you know. But it's made when you tan it and you use it, can use it for, it's for other things, for, you know, clothing and stuff like that. But in kale's case, what I like to do with mine is I like to make kale chips, and I just cut off a bunch of my leaves And then I strip them down from the stalk a little bit, you know, pull them down like you would other, I'm thinking spinach, but I don't think that's the case. Strip them off the main stalk because that main stalk
yep.
can be a little tenacious. So just pull off the
yeah.
little leaves like that and throw them on a cookie sheet. Put a couple tablespoons of olive oil, toss a couple tablespoons of olive oil throughout it, sprinkle with a little Himalayan salt or sea salt, your preference, and bake them in the oven for about 15 minutes at 350. And they come out so good. I have everybody, when I say, oh, try these, and they'll say, well, what is it? And look like you've roasted leaves. And I'm like, yeah, something like that. And,
I did. yeah. That's just what I did.
Yes. And they eat them, and they're like, oh, my gosh, these are so good. What are they? And I'm like, that's that plant right there, kale chips, I call them. And they love them. They're like, oh,
yep.
my gosh, it's so interesting. It's like, I don't know if I like it or dislike it because it's such an interesting flavor, interesting texture, that it keeps you coming back. You know, you go
that's
back
right.
for more and keep eating them. And then... And they're so wonderful, you know,
I have,
for your system.
Literally OD'd on them, literally. You know, like, oh, that was good. Oh, you know, it's
uh-huh.
like a bag of any chips, you know, like you can't eat just one. So
yeah, and they like
yeah.
puff in your mouth because they're like light and
they
airy.
Do.
And they just, as soon as they hit your tongue, they start to disintegrate. And
yep.
it's like,
yeah.
ooh, I love that. But I'm a
yep.
texture person and a texture eater, so anything that has a texture or an interesting component to it for its digestion in the mouth, I really like that.
Right.
So that's what I've been doing with the kale.
What are some of the health benefits to eating kale? You might know this
health?
One too, Dana.
Yeah. Dana, do you have more to add to the kale thing? I'm kind of still new at kale. I've only been really kind of doing it for a couple years, and I just know that it's high in vitamins, and I believe it's
vitamins. I mean, it's kind
K.
of like it's the same kind of benefits you get from any leafy green cruciferous vegetable.
Okay.
Usually high in A and C and K. Vitamin K, and generally have a lot of minerals in them. Yeah, but that kale is definitely a cruciferous vegetable, which is that family like cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower,
right.
Right. collard greens, Brussels sprouts. So they can be very useful cruciferous vegetables in detoxing, too, in flushing toxins out of your system.
Right. So they help to flush out your liver, right?
Right. Yep, they're good for your liver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the same kind of information that I know about. I know it falls into the superfood
right.
category. And they're doing a lot of studies on it for and research. And the different flavonoids in it and how it can help benefit and lower the risk of cancer and things like that due to the antioxidant effect. So those are kind of the – and it also has an anti-inflammatory, and any time you can do any type, you know, combat inflammation in the system is good.
Right.
So
correct.
Those are the few things that I do know about them. And like I was saying, I don't know a lot. But
you know how to make kale chips. That's important.
Well, yeah. And yeah, I know how to use it because I know
yep.
it's good
yep.
for you. Why it's necessarily good for you, I just know. And then, like I said, it's a superfood. And usually those things classified as superfoods. Now, that's like a buzzword. You know it's
right.
good for everything.
Right.
Mostly.
Correct.
You know, one of the things that you should implement into your daily diet, but just only being aware that raw kale is really not something you should take too much of.
Okay, so if there's a little bit of raw kale mixed in with your salad greens, it's not going to kill you.
Right. It's more or less...
Don't do it all the time.
When you're... Yeah, the raw foods, maybe particularly the folks that do the raw foods diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may incorporate that every day or something like that. That would be where I would kind of look at that a little bit.
Okay.
You
okay.
know, as to maybe it could start depleting the iodine.
Thyroid. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yep.
It's just important to know. Here you think you might be doing something that's very healthy, and you it might be counterintuitive. So
yeah, and a lot of times
yeah.
when people say, oh, well, I thought that was healthy and I thought I was doing the right thing, they're right, they're on the right track, but there just hasn't been enough. They've taken little drips and drabs of things that have been putting out there and haven't really investigated enough to know these ins and outs of thing. It's like, you know, taking, we were talking last time about taking turmeric and how, you know, turmeric is better, is more digestible and assimilated through the body. You have to take it with black pepper. You know, so
right.
most of those turmeric recipes, when you take it, all call for black pepper and turmeric together. And
that's
those
right.
are the kind of the little things that sometimes when we're doing our research that are left out of the information.
That's correct.
So, you know,
that's
when you
correct.
Find something that is that they're touting or that's out there that is good for you, always, you know, kind of research it and make sure, because a lot of times what they're doing is they're taking just one constituent from a plant, and then they're promoting that, and that's great, but you just can't isolate that one constituent because it takes the whole plant, like we talked about last time, to really make everything be effective.
Right.
So
now, this is right
good.
Up. This is right up your alley, and this is right up Dana's alley, because both of you are good at really kind of helping people balance things out, try to, you know, balance out your daily intake.
Mm-hmm.
I know that some people out there that are out of balance would almost rather just, like, okay, I'm quitting food. That's it. I'm quitting food because nothing's working here. And so you don't want to do that. You want to actually call up and make an appointment with someone like yourself or like Dana. And, you know, let's try to balance this out and see what it is that you're actually missing. Or, you know, what was it that you were taking too much in of? And that's some of what happens with our harvesting, is that, you know, you're ODing in one area, and, you know, because you have it. So
that's why putting them up for the winter is so good, you know, because then we can have them rolling into the fall while they're abundant.
Right.
You know, like in the, why they're coming in, because you have two harvests technically. You have your August, and then your first harvest, and then you have your late harvest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if you kind of put a little bit of that stuff away, you can have that in between the flood and the influx of all your stuff coming in. Because it's like Brussels
right.
sprouts and stuff are now starting to sprig. You know, they're just now starting to have their little buds and the cauliflower, so you have all those coming in a little bit later on. Eggplants as well, they're getting bigger. Now we have bell peppers that are starting to take off, and all your other heating vegetables, your jalapenos, what else do I got growing out here? Squashes, zucchini squash, that's another nice vegetable you could add to your summer cucumber salad.
Yep.
You know,
now,
to,
is there
to
a way to take zucchini and summer squash and actually preserve it for into the wintertime? Does it freeze okay? Have you ever tried that?
Yes. Yes, it will freeze okay. No, I'm not a real fan of frozen vegetables.
Yeah.
But coming to the Northeast, we don't have much of a choice.
Right.
They do. I would use them. When I use frozen vegetables, a lot of times I turn them into casseroles.
Yep.
Because of, there is definitely a change in the taste, but the nice thing, the difference is putting your own vegetables up versus buying store-bought that have been mass-produced, you're not losing as much prana in them, energy and life force, because you're still handling. You grew your vegetables. You harvested them. You're putting them up. You're freezing them. You're using, you know, not that they're not taking care of stuff out there, the other folks that are doing it, but your energy and your, the way you feel about this food is being preserved as well. So when you use your own frozen vegetables, they're a little bit better than using mass-produced frozen vegetables. Like,
okay,
we take the corn, is the corn is coming in hard and strong right now, and we packed up a bushel of corn last week. And what we did is I blanched the corn on the cob, peeled all the silks off, blanched it for 3 minutes, got it cold in an ice bath, dumped it in an ice bath for 3 minutes, cut it off the cob, put it in vacuum seal bags, vacuum sealed it, labeled it, and threw it in the deep freeze. We took a bag of that out. We took a bag of that out to try it, to use it, and a couple days ago, and it was phenomenal. It was just like the day that we had done the corn, boiled, like if you would boil corn and eat boiled corn.
Yep.
It tastes just, and you would eat it off the cob, it tastes just like that, but it was already, but we packed it, we preserved it, we handled everything about it, and it tastes so much better than the stuff in the store that's been mass-produced.
Right.
So
that, now, how
that's
long
the,
do you think that will last for? Yeah, it's in the deep freeze, so
we're
going to,
I'm going to use that all winter long. I packed up about 20 bags.
Uh-huh.
Bushel gave me, about 20 bags. And each bag took about 5 ears of corn to make about a pound and a half. And I packed up about 20 bags. So my anticipation is that I'll get corn at least all the way into the beginning part of the spring, when I can start maybe eating out of my garden in early spring, you know, cold, starting with cold frames and things like that, maybe in May if I'm, if we'll see how the winter goes. The winters are different here all the time, you know.
They really are, right.
So it's hard to determine when you're going to get your harvest. So that's what I'm hoping for, that we'll get through. And I know this sounds tedious, but, you know, I'm thinking, okay, if we eat corn 3 times a month, we can have that 3 times a month on top of, you know, we'll do our zucchinis and we'll put up our salsa, and then, of course, when the squashes come in a little bit later on, the butternut squash, the acorn squash, and those are also other vegetables that you can cook, freeze up, especially for those folks that are that have one and two persons in their family.
Yep.
They can freeze those. They can take one of those squash, and they can cook that down, make it the way they like, and put it in those little Tupperware containers. I shouldn't use the word Tupperware, but those plastic containers. I don't personally use those things like that, but I like glass jars, but you got to leave enough headspace, and there's a little bit more to that involved in that. But that way they can have that fresh stuff whenever they want it, and they don't feel like that they're not able to eat fresh garden vegetables.
Right.
At any time.
Right. That does actually, it is a problem with the plastics and what you're going to actually preserve everything in, especially if you're going to freeze something.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear just recently, though, from someone whose mother was a Tupperware dealer for years and years and years, is that all Tupperware, and yeah, it's a brand name, has no BPA in it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
That's a good thing to know, because I'm not a fan of any plasticware whatsoever.
Exactly.
And I always use glass, you know, for lack of another trademark, mason jars, to put a lot of my stuff in, because you can freeze those too.
Oh, see, now I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, you can freeze the mason jars as well.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom told me that, because my mom gave up canning years ago and says, Gina Marie, I don't can a thing anymore. You just need to start freezing it. And I'm thinking, okay. So
that's so much easier. Okay.
It was a lot easier.
Much easier.
Because we can outside using our, you guys, lobster pots, your lobster pots?
Yes,
where, you know, you boil lobster, and that's where we do all our canning in those.
Right.
When we're doing our pepper jellies, that's another great thing when your peppers come in. You can also make that fantastic pepper jelly out of your green and red bell peppers.
Talk about pepper jelly and how you make that.
Pepper jelly is made from, you can make red and green, red or green, or both if you'd like. And you just harvest all your green bell peppers up, core them, being that you remove all your seeds from them.
Uh-huh.
Then you take and you put them in the food processor and process them out. But don't get them too small, okay? You want to just kind of chop them up a little bit. And then you want to put them in a brine, and a brine being a vinegar solution.
Okay.
Then you let that sit for 24 hours. You strain off that brine. Then you put – do you strain that off? No, not yet. Keep everything together. Then you put it back in your food processor and process that more. And then you put it through a sieve or a cheesecloth, and you press all that juice out of that.
Okay.
And all you have left is what they call mark, which would be the leftover bell peppers that you've pressed everything out of. Put that off to the side. That's another that's another recipe. Then you take this clear liquid, and then you add your, you heat this up on the stove, and then you add your sugar to it. Bring that to a boil. Put it in your jars, and then process your jars. I believe it's 6 minutes off the top of my head. I'd have to double check on that, but process that for about 6 minutes, and you know, let them sit on the counter until the lids start going pop, 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 pop. And once they're all set up, that's the end of it.
I have had your pepper jelly, Gina, and it is delicious.
Oh.
Absolutely delicious. I got to be a guinea pig the first year you started
The first year we did that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was really good. Gary,
my husband,
was a
real hit.
A huge fan. It really was.
I've had people give me recipe ideas. They're putting them, basting like their sausage. One of my guy friends said he used it on sausage. They've used it as a meat glaze, like on pork loin. They've used it on chicken. It's kind of like a dip. They've used it as like a dipper, you know, when you take your meat and dip it in sauce.
Sure. Sure.
I know, I don't mean to sound so
I know,
like,
it's
I don't
okay.
know what I'm talking about,
it.
But I don't. Dipping sauces.
Yes. Yeah.
And
so you can add
it like
to almost any, if you're, you know, if you do consume meat and you want to have it even in a sandwich, so, you know, spread it on one of your slices of bread and consume it that way. Delicious.
Yeah.
Now, Gina, we have a caller on, so I want to actually click over to them and see if they have a question for you. So, caller, the last four digits is 7855, and you are unmuted.
Well, hi,
Hello.
Guys. It's Sharon. Hi.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. It's great information, and one of the things you said earlier, Gina, is about the Nutra, the RX, the bullet.
Yep.
NutriBullet RX, and I have that, and I have made fresh soup, and Elaine's right. You just push the button, and it makes its own soup, and it's ready. It's hot and ready to eat as soon as you're finished, and if you don't use the red button for the heat, I just make a lot of juices. But I did want to let you know that they do tell you when you're making juice, if you use apples, to always take the seeds out. Which I do.
Nice. So there's a little recipe book that comes with it.
It does. And the one thing when you make the soups in that that I have found is that it gets foamy. It's because it's rotating so quickly. There's kind of a foaminess to it, and so I've kind of experimented with trying to get that where it tastes more like a nice soup instead of that that foaminess to it. It's kind of pulpy and foamy. So depending on what you're making, I made vegetable soup, and I threw a lot of vegetables in there. So
okay. Does it help if you let it sit? You know, like if you're pouring a glass of beer or something and it has a head foam on it and you let it sit for a little bit and the foam goes down.
You know, I find it gets foamier.
Oh, really?
It's like the pulp rises to the top, so it creates its own head. So you do have to stir it. And you dilute it with some sort of broth or something else that helps. But it does do it, and it does it very quickly. I used it for a squash soup one day, like a butternut squash soup, and it was very good. Mm. It was just a little frothy.
Oh.
And I couldn't
thank you for that. Adding that, Sharon, because, you know, we as we have just increased the sales of NutriBullet RX, but you know what? We really do want this information to get out there to our listeners. If there's any way that we can actually help it so that your diet can be healthier, then
that's
important.
Right, and that's why we did it, yeah. And
exactly.
It's not very big. I had a juicer that was quite large, and it separated everything. And then it was like, well, what do I do with the pulp now? So this, you put everything in, and you mix it up, and you add your liquids, too. You do have to add liquids. But it's smaller. It doesn't have a big footprint, and it's done, like you say, it stops when it's finished. It knows when it's done. And unless you're going to turn on the heat, all you do is actually set it inside, and it starts. You don't even have to push a button unless you're making soup. So, and I got mine on sale at Kohl's.
See, that's a good thing to know, too. So you don't have to order this online, guys.
No, you don't.
Can look around.
Yeah.
They
had it on sale this last weekend. I saw it.
So. Okay. So is this the one, because they had one that was out that was 600 horsepower, and now they have a new version of it, because everything has always got a new version that is 900 horsepower. So I would just suggest that to people, to look at the horsepower of it, because the higher the horsepower, the more it actually pulverizes those little bits and pieces that you don't want to be bothered taking out. You know, it's for the same reason that so many people avoid things like raspberries or whatever when they're juicing or something. You want it to be pulverized. You don't want to be, you know, kind of chewing your juice. So,
that's very true.
Yeah, it's very true. You get to that last little glompy at the bottom of the glass, and it's like, oh, God, you know, you're chewing it down. So supposedly the 900 horsepower gets rid of that glompiness at the bottom.
Well, I'm not sure if I have. I don't know which one I have, because I've had it for at least 6 months, but it doesn't do that. I mean, the only kind of little seeds I've ever found in it are the strawberry seeds. But everything else does seem to get pulverized. But I usually cut, you know, like apples and things like that. I will cut out the core seeds anyway. I don't put them in. So
especially
a juicer or something like that. But I heard you guys talking about that, and this has been very informative. Thanks very much.
Thank you for that information. Yes. Yep. That's what we like. We like a conversation. So thank you, Sharon. And,
you're very welcome.
All right. I'm going to meet you back up now. All right. Well, Dana, what else would you like to add to today, or any more information to extend to our audience, or questions for Gina?
I think we covered a good lot of things. But one thing that I was thinking about while we were talking was, and Gina, of course, talks about growing her own herbs and vegetables and harvesting her own. I would like to point out, to keep in mind, that when you're not growing your own and you're buying from the supermarket, or when you're buying from a farmer's market or that kind of thing, you might want to think about how pesticide-laden the vegetables might be. There is a list online called the Dirty Dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And things that we've discussed, like cucumbers and kale and bell peppers, cherry tomatoes, those kind of things, are best bought organic if you can't actually talk to the farmer at your local farmer's market and find out if they've used some kind of integrated pest management or whatever, or have held back on the spray. So, yeah, look for the Dirty Dozen. There's also a Clean 15 that tells you the vegetables and herbs and plants with the lowest pesticide loads. So it's all about pesticide loads and
mm-hmm.
how much is on the plant while it's being grown to prevent the bugs. So I just wanted to put that out there. There are some things that you might want to think, if you don't have your own garden, think about buying organic.
That is a very good point. I'm glad you did bring that to everyone's attention. I have a tendency to forget about that because I shop organic and pesticide-free from my local farmers, and I try to grow most of my stuff. And when it's just not out there and available, I just do without. So I'm so glad that you did bring that up, because that is so important that we don't ingest all those pesticides out there that they treat some of these large farms with, unlike our smaller local farmers who do it as, you know, pesticide-free as possible, or using natural pesticides, you know, to help with the growing season and keep the bugs from, you know, because bugs like their vegetables too.
That's right.
Right. Right. And I think the one thing that people don't understand about the GMO controversy is that genetically modified organisms are grown specifically to be resistant to pesticides. So they want to be able to spray loads of Roundup, basically, which is a very, very toxic pesticide, on fields of corn and other farm vegetables, and have them grow without being damaged by the pesticides, but also not have to worry about the bug situation. So the genetically modified organisms, although they're not a natural organism, we don't really know what that's going to play out to be in the long run. But the real concern, you know, a real important concern of that in my mind is that they're so pesticide resistant, so they can just, you know, they can just put all kinds of pesticides on them in heavy loads.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And our body is getting all this toxicity from so many angles, and it really starts to build up and cause illness and disease for people.
Right. So that does get into actually washing your fruits and your vegetables and stuff. Do you guys have, like, an opinion on that and what you should do and what you should use?
There are certain things. If I don't buy it organic, I will definitely take the outer. I'll definitely take the peel off, like cucumbers
mm-hmm.
or peaches, that kind of thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Apples. Apples are notorious for being high on the Dirty Dozen list, having a lot of pesticides.
They are.
If I can't get organic for some reason, which I always prefer, I will always take the peel off, and that way I'm getting rid of anything that's at least sprayed on it. I can't get rid of anything that it's, you know, that the tree or the plant has grown up through has absorbed through its roots and actually, you know, gotten into the flesh of the fruit or vegetable. But one
mm-hmm.
thing that you do is take the peel off, and that'll help get rid of the pesticides.
That's exactly what I do.
Yes.
And then,
what I do with them, too, is also, you know, with fruits, and I buy organic. It's all organic, unless I grew it myself, which is also organic. But I do give them a quick little bath in water, generally spring water, and vinegar. Just a quick cleaning off. I don't like to use any of the soaps that they have out there that they say go ahead and use that on your fruits and vegetables. I don't know, it just doesn't seem quite right to me. but a little bit of vinegar, and actually if you do that on your strawberries, it does help to preserve them for a little bit longer. So you just have to make sure that you, once again, rinse it off, or else your strawberries kind of smell and taste a little bit like vinegar. So, you know, it's just a very, which is a totally different taste. But, you know, that's one way to actually, you know, clean your stuff off. Otherwise, just a little rinse in spring water, and it's, I think it's generally pretty fine, so long it's organic. So,
yeah, that's about all I do as well, is rinse them in water or float them, let them soak for a little bit, and tossle them around
right
in the bowl or the basin,
right,
whatever you're using for that.
Right, right.
Yeah, that I think all that is, that's the way to go. Either
it is
or,
the way to
you
go.
Know, as long as you try to rinse them. If you can't get them organic, and especially the cucumbers, how they have that waxy stuff all over them, if you buy them in the store.
Yeah.
But they're so easy to grow, and, you know, you could even try, I'm going to try it this year, I'm going to see how I can do with some inside plants. I'm going to attempt my inside plant, and seeing how cucumbers are one of the easiest things to grow, I'm going to attempt to see if we could do that on the inside this year. Not that really eating out of the, it's considered eating out of the season, eating a cucumber in the middle of winter, but it'd just be, you know, something nice to try to have some of those cucumbers just to put on your eyes, because your eyes still get hot.
Well, I was just going to say, Gina, you do lotions and soaps and things like that, so I'm sure you could make yourself up a nice fresh lotion using, you know, some of that cucumber. And, you know, in the middle of winter, that might be really nice.
Yeah, I really kind of steer clear of using food stuff in my product line, only because of the water and bacteria that can be produced when you have cosmetics that are used for a long period of time. But if I were to do that and whip that up, if I was just to whip that up myself in my kitchen, like in my kitchen cosmetics workshops and things like that, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely,
yep.
I would do that.
Yeah, because otherwise it wouldn't keep. But for you yourself, that would be lovely.
Yeah,
especially
it would be.
If you're growing them in the middle of winter. So, Gina, we have once again killed an hour or more just talking about very interesting things. So we'll have you back on again. Because we can just keep talking and talking and talking, and it would be nice to get into, you know, the a bit more of the Ayurvedic properties of foods that we eat and what we consume, and, you know.
And with wintertime coming, we could explore the seasons, the changing of the seasons, how to eat, like we were talking earlier about eating with the seasons, eating what's in season.
Right.
Yeah. And how each season gives us our nutrients.
Gina, we should definitely have you on when the seasons start changing again, and bring the Ayurveda piece into that. Yeah, that would be great.
Okay,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I want to hear all about your corn chowder in the middle of winter.
I know, with my fresh corn that I
processed,
because we thought about that. My uncle says, "Are you going?" He's heading back to Arizona, and he goes, "Are you going to make corn chowder?" And I'm like, I will make it just before you leave, but I'm not a huge fan of making all that guru heavy food stuff in the summer. But I
in
told him it
season,
was close.
Yeah,
it was close enough that I would make him a pot before he heads back to Arizona, because he spends his winters in Arizona and no longer gets to eat the nourishing winter soups and stews from the harvest vegetables, which we didn't get into those yet. So maybe
not
we
yet,
can talk
but
again
we will.
In October. Or something, we could talk again. You could, if you know your schedule permits, and we could discuss some of those winter harvest bounty or the late harvest bounty soups.
That would be nice. That would
that
be
we
nice.
Can make.
Absolutely.
Sounds great.
Well,
okay.
Gina, this has been a lot of fun. So, how can people find you?
Well, you can find me on my website at www.rainwaterfalls.com. I am also on Facebook. I've recently joined Twitter at Rainwater Gina. And you can phone me. My, if you don't have the internet capabilities, my phone number is 781-706-0339. And you can email me at Gina, G-I-N-A, at rainwaterfalls.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gina. And I am Elaine Reed Cole, and you can find me on Facebook, or you can also go to my website, www.thewingedmystic.com. And Dana.
And I'm Dana Zimmerman, www.danazimmerman.com. You can find me on the Mystic 3 radio page and my own on Facebook and my own page on Facebook. So thanks again, Gina. We really enjoyed having you for another show, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again. Thanks to everyone,
Gina,
for listening. Thanks, Elaine. And until next week at noon Eastern time when we see everybody again, Elaine.
Let's keep talking about it. All right. Bye,
everybody. Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.